Lawrence, are you ready?
I'm ready.
Let's do it. Thank you for joining us on The Change Artist, where we bring our listeners stories and great advice for leading and following through change from business leaders who are making a difference in their organizations. I'm your host, Alyssa Cox. And here on The Change Artist, our motto is, if change is the only constant in life, then let's do it better. And this season, we're focusing specifically on social change. So let's jump right in. Lawrence, how do you define social change?
I define social change as a lasting change to what's normal or accepted in society, hopefully towards a higher moral ideal or principle. Dr. King had a quote that said, "The arc of the moral universe is long, but it bends towards justice." So change takes a long time, but it does happen. And I think what's really important is to educate people on the social issues, because I believe that people are generally good and want to make the right decision. And there are large chunks of the population that might not understand how much of an issue something is. But once they're fully educated, people tend to do the right thing.
I love that. Now, for those of you who don't know him, Lawrence Williams is a principal at the Decarceration Fund, a venture capital fund formed to capitalize on tech-enabled, highly innovative enterprises that are working to eliminate the suffering caused by the U.S. criminal justice system. The fund focuses on making sound investments into commercially scalable businesses that return power and agency to those from whom it has been systematically taken away. And today, Lawrence is here to talk to us about balancing profit and purpose. Now, there are a lot of things I want to unpack there in your definition. Before we do that, let's take a moment and talk about the language that we should be using when we talk about the experience of incarceration and about those who are going through that experience. Can you give us sort of a short course on what kind of language we should be using in this space?
Yeah, so some things to avoid, you know, are, you know, people saying ex-felon or convict. What we like to do is use terms like returning citizen and kind of put the noun around the positive. We, you know, also say things like the criminal justice system, but I tend to use the criminal legal system to take, you know, a focus more towards the legal side of it and, you know, fairness. We like to use justice impacted individual or system impacted individual.
That's great, because I think the language that we use in this space has a big impact in the way we think about the issues at hand and how we then go and empower people. I want to come back to your definition. When you think about lasting change, how do you measure lasting change? You know, you talk about the arc of history and the arc of justice. It does take a long time. And so when we have these really long time horizons, how do we think about measuring our impact? And particularly when we start to think about a venture capital fund and investment timelines, how do we think about that long frame change that we're trying to drive in the world and marry that with sometimes a shorter term investment return imperative for a fund like yours?
Of course. So the first part of the question is kind of how we look at impact and how do we measure outcomes. Kind of do that three different ways at the Decarceration Fund. We look at, you know, days of incarceration avoided. We look at, you know, reducing the suffering while in the system and a reduction of recidivism. So for the first part, we had our first company we invested into is a company called UpTrust. And UpTrust is a platform that streamlines communication between public defenders and defendants with the aim of reducing the amount of pretrial violations. But then they since also expanded into probation. And probation is a big deal because, you know, 70% of the people who are on probation who are rearrested are arrested for a technical violation, like missing a meeting or leaving the state without informing your parole officer. So a platform that helps increase communication between your parole officer and person and trying to reduce technical violations is really impactful. So far, they've had a 50% reduction in recidivism so far in their 1,000 users. Another way to do is reduce the suffering while in. So there was a company that my partner Chris invested into called Pigeonly. Pigeonly is an affordable and easy to use platform for communication for people who are in the system currently and allows them to talk to and send pictures back and forth with their family and friends while they're incarcerated. Incarcerated men and women who maintain contact with their support system and their family are way more likely to succeed upon their release. And so not only just keeping that communication close, but they've also provided at least $13 million in savings to family and friends and loved ones with their low-cost platform. Finally, you know, we want to increase the likelihood of success once you come out of the system and reduce recidivism. We actually recently invested into a social networking platform for people who are formerly incarcerated, and they offer three main things. They provide employers with a platform and structure to streamline working and hiring formerly incarcerated individuals, support services and nonprofits that provide that wraparound services and help for them. And they also have a education platform to give them the tools they need to increase their professionalism and develop professionally as well from people who have experience in reentry. That's how we look at a measure of success on the social side of our investments. But balancing the friction between social return and financial return, for us, an ideal scenario, you know, there is no friction. The impact is so closely tied to the success of the company that the more successful the company is, the more impact they create. And at the Decarceration Fund, we deliberately try to screen out companies where the impact and the business model are not in alignment. And also, too, we try to screen out for unintended consequences. So in the case of UpTrust and increasing the communication between your parole officer and you out on parole, we specifically screened out for any type of geolocation and trying to, you know, look at if there potentially could be, you know, using your phone as a substitute for an ankle monitor, right? So we also do try to make sure that whatever innovation we bring to this space, that there's also not an unintended consequence coming back to the end user.
So you mentioned that you filter out opportunities or investment ideas where the social and the financial benefits aren't aligned. Can you give us some examples of what that might look like?
Well, I think the example that I was just using with UpTrust, right? So there probably could be a lot of revenue to be gained in exploring that area of using geolocation and geo-tracking as a way to, you know, maybe increase the amount of monitoring that's going on and do it in a cheaper way than, you know, ankle monitors costing thousands of dollars now and using the phone that you might already have. We also think that there's a negative social benefit to that, even if there is a financial benefit and innovation there that could be had. So we try to look at it from the perspective of avoiding any unintended consequences, even if there might be a financial gain from innovation.
So you're playing a role you're not just filtering upfront ideas, but you're also working with business owners and idea generators on refining their ideas, refining their business plans, to make sure that you're meeting both your social and your financial objectives.
Exactly.
So where do you source opportunities from?
Well, we have a strong ecosystem, and that's what we're doing now. You know, we have partners like Village Capital, American Family, but, you know, we're trying to build up that ecosystem. You know, there's accelerators coming out now, like AWS accelerators for Black founders, Techstars. It's hard because I don't think that there are a lot of people who are focusing on this justice tech space specifically. And I think that we're helping to lead that, but we're doing the ecosystem development now to really provide, you know, a space for people to do innovation in this space. But we lean on our partners and we lean on, you know, the nonprofit space and trying to find, you know, great founders that are focused on this area.
You know, if I think about, like, I might have an idea that I think might help system impacted citizens, help returning citizens, help folks that are currently involved in the legal system. But I don't have personal experience in this space. How important is that firsthand personal experience when you're reviewing opportunities and ideas? And how do entrepreneurs actually connect potentially with system impacted individuals who can provide that firsthand experience?
Yeah, well, I think it is really important to, have system impacted individuals on your team. And, you know, about half of the companies in our pipeline are system impacted founders. And if they're not system impacted, we strongly suggest that someone on the team be system impacted for a myriad of reasons. But, you know, one is we're big on diversity of thought. And we believe that, you know, early on, a team should be a meritocracy and let the best idea win. But as well, people who are system impacted are closest to the problem and they have that lived experience. And usually a lot of passion around that issue. And so it's crucial for any business leader to be close to the issue and have that experience.
This feels like a really cool area. It's not an area I had ever been aware of before. So tell me, how did you come to the Decarceration Fund? What was your journey to this particular tech space?
Yeah, well, I actually started my career out doing some product management and a little bit of marketing at a company called Fiserv, a fintech company. I came out of college wanting to do that, and I always knew I wanted to be in the entrepreneurial space. during that time, also became chief product officer of a startup called The Moves. And The Moves was an event management platform. And we were like fortunate enough to have an early exit. We had about 80,000 users, about 500 events on the platform. But we had an early exit, and I realized that I would love to help empower other people with their ideas and really be around the entrepreneurial space, especially if I didn't have, you know, an idea that was burning of my own. So I went to go work with, like I said, one of the investors in that company, Kiwi Tech, Kiwi Venture Partners, and worked with them for about 2 years until 2020. And then COVID hit. So I came back home to Philadelphia. And in Philadelphia, there just so happened to be a very strong angel investor network called Social Venture Circle. And I really got interested in the impact investing space around them. So I helped them do ecosystem development, due diligence, and trying to help them find, you know, Black and brown entrepreneurs and trying to help them find people, you know, that could use the help and kind of help them with the impact space as learning as well. During that time, that's when I met my partner, Chris Bentley, who was working on the decarceration fund. And I thought it was interesting because, you know, my mom was a Philadelphia police officer for 27 years and my dad was an entrepreneur and investor. And so I kind of came home and was kind of tying both of them together. And, you know, I thought that this was a good fit. So I feel like I'm living in my purpose.
When our listeners think about funds and investment, you can invest to move the needle socially. You can invest with your time. You can invest with your dollars. How do you think our listeners should think about investing with their dollars if they want to try to get involved in space like this?
Yeah, well, I mean, I think you can start with understanding how you're currently investing your money and where your dollars are going. So it's not always obvious things like investing directly into private prisons, but there are over 4,000 companies that profit from prison labor. Maybe understanding, you know, who you're purchasing things from and trying to start just making it a part of your daily life to support companies that, you know, are doing the right thing. There's a website called asyousow.org that analyzes the climate and social impact of thousands of U.S. mutual funds and ETFs and 401k plans. And you can look for, you know, gun-free funds, weapon-free funds. But in this case, there are prison-free funds where you can put your money and your morals. And then also, too, I think you can take the time to educate yourself on the prison industrial complex and the biases that are built into our system and understand the humanity of the people impacted and the shortcomings of the system.
So you mentioned companies that employ currently incarcerated citizens. What is your perspective on some of those companies? Is your perspective that those are empowering moves for those citizens? Is it exploitative? Help me understand how you think about employment within a prison.
Well, I think that it is great to be employed, especially if you're working with an employer that is trying to help develop you personally, professionally, is giving you the resources you need. I think in a lot of cases, it's exploitive and you're not paying them fair wages. But there are a lot of companies out there that are helping people who are currently incarcerated, you know, to kind of get their life back on track and helping them gain the skills they need to continue their success and continue their trajectory professionally after they leave the system. But of those 4,000, I think it's 4,200 companies that profit from prison labor, I think by and large, they're underpaid for their services. And I think that that is exploitative.
And so how, as an investor, somebody who perhaps would like to invest in the well-being of people who are within the system, how does an investor look at different investment options and look at different companies and tell the difference? Is that something that our listeners should be trying to do on their own? Or should our listeners be relying on sort of asyousow.com or relying on other aggregators to do that due diligence?
I think that you could do it on your own. One thing that we look at too is, for example, with some of these startups, does the cost come back to the end user? So in the case of UpTrust, the end users do not pay for the use of this platform. The parole offices do. The public defender's offices do. Right now, we're only looking at opportunities where there's another entity, including nonprofits and foundations, that could be utilizing these platforms as well.
And as then you're looking at these opportunities and you're investing, do you have the same sort of return on investment thresholds for your opportunities that you might apply to if you were investing in non-socially driven opportunities? Is the return in social investing comparable to the return in non-social investing?
Well, we are looking for basically market rate returns. I think one thing that you see in the space of the impact space is that there maybe aren't as many unicorns, but there aren't as many, you know, complete failures as well. There's other pockets of money, you know, grant money, nonprofit money, foundation money that is very helpful as they continue to explore out their mission. But another thing that's interesting too is that, you know, when we think about not only financial return, but you know, societal return, impact, and you think about your business model in under the lens of trying to avoid unintended consequences, I think it forces the entrepreneur to really think through their model and unlocks all types of innovations. And so I think there's a lot of innovation in this impact space. And you saw it kind of early on with, you know, maybe green tech and some of that. But I think that there's an opportunity to move that from not just, you know, benefit for the earth or, you know, reducing chemicals for humans or different things of that nature in green tech, and also move that over to spaces like justice or education. And I think that you're starting to see that now.
I think what's interesting to me here and coming out of our conversation is, as I think and as our listeners think about where they put their money, there's a certain amount of money that we put every year toward donations, right? This is a one-way outflow to try to drive a social benefit. But this idea that there are investment-based outflows, you know, social investing can become part of our investment strategy for our savings. And if we are investing in a fund that's targeting market returns, that investing in social benefit can actually drive the same kind of return as investing in sort of a market indexed mutual fund.
Right. No, I think you're completely right. And I think that it is important that, you know, put your money where your mouth is, or at least invest your morals, I think is really one way to put it. You know, whatever you put your money, time and attention to grows. So I think that putting, you know, if you can receive market rate returns and do good at the same time and get, you know, not only those financial returns, but get those impact and societal returns, why not? I think that that's a better model.
Yeah, this idea of amplifying your social impact, not only by thinking about how and where you donate money, but also thinking about how and where you invest, I think is a very powerful message. I know we're coming up to the end of our time here, but before we go, I do have one more question. So what is one thing that listeners can do to start to move the needle on social issues that resonate with them?
I think the first piece is, again, education. I think you really need to educate yourself on the issues and share that information with loved ones and friends and get and spread the word on what is actually in these issues, what are the nuances. And like I said, I think that people, if they fully understand an issue, generally do the right thing. So educate yourself on the issues. I think get to know people who are affected by the issues and start to really see the humanity in them. You know, talk to people who are assist impacted and really get to understand them and their story. And I think that once we all start treating each other with that level of humanity and seeing ourselves in these issues and these problems and these people, that's the beginning of the change we need.
I love that. Well, thank you, Lawrence. I know I've learned a lot today, and I'm sure our listeners have as well. Now, if our listeners want to learn more specifically about the Decarceration Fund and its mission, how should they go about doing that?
You can go to our website, www.decarcerationfund.com. It has plenty of information on there. We're on Instagram, Twitter, and LinkedIn at Decarceration Fund or DE_carceration on Instagram.
Perfect. And we will be sure to include those links and those social media tags as well in the show notes. I really appreciate your time and your perspective here. Hopefully our listeners can take your advice and apply it to their own social circles. If any of our listeners would like to bring these kinds of conversations to their own organizations, you can visit us at blueswiftconsulting.com to schedule an intro call. Thanks again, Lawrence.
Thank you.